All right. So, okay. So I think we'll get started.
Sorry.
No, I I feel very guilty interrupting this. Okay, so I thought I'd talk a little bit about the central motif of the end of the parasha that we read yesterday, the mitzvah of Mila. And as you saw from the title that was sent out, again, thanks to Joanne for the hard work that goes into that. No, that's okay. The mitzvah of Mila is, you know, very much tied up with Avraham Avinu as a person. And normally we talk about mitzvos, you know, we don't necessarily think about an individual having that much of an impact on the mitzvah. But there are certain exceptions, you know, when it comes to the Avodat Yom HaKippurim, you know, Bezot Yavo Aharon Al HaKodesh, Aharon really put his personal stamp on the mitzvah. And the same thing you might even say about Birkat Kohanim, Asher Kedushanu V'Kedushato Shal Aharon, V'Tzivanu L'Varechen Amo Yisrael Be'Ava, Aharon is an Ohev Shalom and a Rodev Shalom. So there's no question that when it comes to the mitzvah of Mila, you know, the personality of Avraham Avinu looms very large. We call it, you know, Briso Shel Avraham Avinu. And that's something that's, I think, extremely important, and I hope to be able to reflect on that over the course of the next few minutes. Let me begin by presenting three questions, really, based on two successive psukim at the introduction of the mitzvah of Mila, and hopefully develop one sort of thread that I hope can answer the questions and also shed some light, as I just alluded to, on the role of Avraham Avinu. The mitzvah of Mila is introduced with a very fascinating and much debated clause. Avram is told by Hashem, "Vayira Hashem al Avram vayomer ani kel shakai hishalech lefanai veyesamim." Hishalech lefanai veyetamim, that you should go before me and be complete. Unklus always defines tamim as shalem. And there's a question in general what exactly it means. Hishalech lefanai veyetamim. This is then becomes a mitzvah min haTorah and Sefer Dvarim in Parsha Shoftim. The pasuk says, "Tamim tihiya im Hashem Elokecha." In other words, be like Avram. And the Ramban links the two. And for the Ramban, it has something to do with, you know, believing that God is ultimately in control of the universe, not to respond as we find in Parsha Shoftim to just kosmim and meonanin and mechashvim, various forms of sorcery and necromancy, etc., but to believe that ultimately, whatever the astrologers say, it's the case that God really controls the world. So for the Ramban, it's about a certain, you know, ideological commitment, about an ideological purity. But in the context of Bris Mila, it's really fascinating because, you know, the term tamim also comes up, let's say, in the world of avoda, in the world of korbanos, se tamim zachar ben shana yelachem, that the animal should be unblemished. So here, in the context of the only legitimate wound that you're creating in yourself, to say, and, you know, unim altem eit besar latchem, that is a very fascinating thing. It would seem like you're actually creating a mum and not, you know, tamim. So that is question number one. Question number two emerges from the next pasuk. The pasuk says, again, after, immediately following, italech levanai veye tamim, to Avram, vetnabri ti ben yuvein echa, so here the question isn't so much on the pasuk, but based on Rashi. Rashi says two things, which I think are both questions. Number one, he says, bris shel ahava, it's a covenant of love. Nowhere in the Torah is the term love used with respect to the mitzvah of Mila. Though it should be noted, the Rambam took this idea very seriously. The culmination of Sefer Ahava, the second of the 14 volumes of the Yad HaChazaka of the Mishnah Torah, is actually Hilchos Mila, which is really interesting. The Rambam could have put it elsewhere. For example, he could have put it, let's say, in Sefer Shoftim in Hilchos Mamrim, right after he deals with the laws of Kibud Av V'Eim. But he puts it in Sefer Ahava, which I think is a very interesting idea. So the Rambam seems to have taken this idea very seriously. Bris Shel Ahava. So that's the question. The second question that I want to deal with is, what does Mila have to do with Ahava Hashem, love of God? And then third and finally, U Bris Haaretz Shal Yidei Mitzvah Zo, animo risha es haaretz lecha. I'm going to give you the land. So again, you know, bris mila applies everywhere in the world. If Jews would be living in Madagascar, they'd be obligated in bris mila there. If they'd be living on Jupiter, you know, maybe one day they will be. We like to kid around that there is at least a Chabad house there. You know, then bris mila will apply there as well. So what exactly does it have to do? Now, admittedly, in the psukim itself, we do have this sense, and the Ramban picks up on this as well, Avram is promised the land on multiple occasions throughout Parshas Lech Lecha. We're now talking about the seventh aliyah at this point. And in the first aliyah, right, Hashem appears to Avram and he says, "Lazarecha etena da'aretz hazot." So, you know, there are many different times the land of Israel is promised, but there is a special integration in the Psukim, it would appear, between the mitzvah of Mila and the land of Israel. V'natati l'cha zarecha acharecha eid eretz megarecha eid kol eretz kenan l'chuzat olam. So I'm not pinning this entirely on Rashi, but Rashi does take it to the next level, right? Because nowhere in the Psukim does it sound like a t'nai, a condition for your inheritance of the land of Israel is bris Mila. And yet, that is indeed what Rashi says. Sha'al yidei mitzvah zo, through the mitzvah of Mila, I will be morish you, the land of Canaan. So that's the third question, is what is the relationship between Bris Mila and Eretz Canaan? Now, historically, it is very fascinating. When the Jewish people first crossed over the Yarden, it was that time of year, they had to offer the Korban Pesach, and we know that the Korban Pesach can't be consumed by somebody who is uncircumcised, a male is uncircumcised, v'chol arel yuchalbo, already told in the 12th chapter of Sefer Shemot. So Yehoshua actually circumcises the entire nation, and that's how we get the name Gilgal. Hayom galosias cherpas Mitzrayim me'aleichem. I have removed the legacy, the cherpa, the shameful legacy of you not having performed bris mila since really the days in Mitzrayim. The only tribe that kept the mitzvah of Mila, this is singled out in the Torah, Shevet Levi, Levi Amar, Ve'es Brischa Yinsoru, that they guarded the mitzvah of Mila, but everybody else abandoned it in the desert. So when the Jewish people actually cross over for the first time into the land of Israel, they practice the mitzvah of Mila, which really seems to reinforce this Rashi, Al Yudei Mitzvah Zo, Ani Morish Lecha, Esar. So again, three questions. How can you say Tamim if you're creating a wound? And number two, what does love have to do with it, as the song goes?
Can I just interrupt for one second?
Please.
Wasn't there something with Mila and the lathe that the...
Right. Yes, the very end of Sefer Dvarim, it talks about Umal Tem Eis Or Las Levavchem. And then also Umal Hashem Okecha Slavavcha. Right, so that's the idea of, you know, removing, you know, this unnatural, you know, occlusion that covers one's heart. So that may be relevant here, I would admit that, but this is actually creating a wound in the body as opposed to that's like a metaphysical idea. The Ramban associates that with removing the Yetzer Hara that was introduced thanks to the sin of the Eitz Hadas. Okay, so let's try to put all this information together. So there is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos which says the following. The Mishnah says, Asara Nisyonos Nisnasa Avram Avinu Alav Ashalom. Okay, notice the focus on Avram. Avram was tested 10 times. Ve'amad bechulam. I'm not sure exactly how to translate ve'amad bechulan. You might say he passed all of them, but I don't think that's actually the best translation. There are indications, according to various Rishonim, that he didn't pass all the tests. For example, the Ramban very famously says that when he was tested at the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha, vayhi ra'av ba'aretz, vayered Avram Mitzrayim alagur sham, Avram failed the test, right? That Avram should never have left the land of Canaan just because there was a famine. He should have trusted God. And one of the tests being that Sarah was taken by Paro. She was Sarai at the time, but allow me to use the term Sarah, just a little easier. So the Ramban says this is also a great failure on Avram's part. Like, why should he, like, lie and, you know, create a situation where his wife is going to be taken? He knew that was going to happen. You know, that wasn't exactly the right thing to do. So to say Va'amad Bechulan means that he passed all the tests, I think, is probably not the best translation. I might say that he persevered through all of them, that, you know, sometimes he may have done better than others, but, you know, he didn't yield, which I'm going to come back to in a moment. So the Mishnah concludes, Lehodia kama chibato shel Avram Avinu. This tells us, you know, really, the way that it's typically understood, you know, Hashem loved Avram greatly, that he was able to, you know, withstand, if not perhaps to pass all of these many nisyonot, these many, many, many challenges. That was the standard interpretation. However, the Tiferes Yisrael, in the Yachin section, as well as Tzvi Naor, for those of you who know, have interpreted the Mishnah differently. I know this because Tzvi said this last year, and since then I've been repeating this in his name, that the actual pshat in the Mishnah is the opposite. Not to say why God loved Avram so much, but if you want to know how Avram was able to withstand trial after trial, test after test, it's because Avram loved God very much. Lodia kama chibato shel Avram Avinu. As we read in the Haftorah last week, Zera Avraham Ohavi. Avram is the individual who's described in Tanakh, numerous individuals are described as fearing God. Avram is the one who's described as loving God. Moshe is never given that description. Yitzchak is never given that description. Yaakov is never given that description. This is sui generis. Avram ohavi. Avram is the one who's described as the great lover of God. Lodia kama chibato shel Avram avinu. So I do think that explains at least one of our questions. Then the second question, what does love have to do with it? Bris shel ahava, it's a reflection of Avram's love of God. That Avram is willing to inflict significant amounts of pain on himself. He was 99 years old, right? This is a very, very difficult thing to do. But when you really love someone or something, you're willing to sacrifice for it. That's extremely important, right? And so the bris of Mila is actually a bris shel ahava, not so much love flowing from God to us, but I think actually it's a reflection of the love that we manifest, and particularly that Avram manifested for God, and I think that's a very important point. Now, once you establish that, I think you can then move on to the next issue, which is what does this have to do with the land of Israel? I think it has everything to do with the land of Israel. The Gemara in the first parak of Maseches Brachos tells us that Eretz Israel is niknes b'Yisurin. The only way the Jewish people, you know, are going to be able to maintain their connection with the land of Israel is through extreme perseverance, through suffering. You know, and it's very tragic, and we never minimize the individual tragedies, but this has all been foretold. You know, if it seems to you like there's an ongoing crisis, you know, in the land of Israel, there's a perpetual crisis, it's because there is perpetual crisis. And that's what Chazal meant when they said, Eretz Israel, niknes b'Yisurin. You know, unfortunately, not long goes by between, you know, reading about different tragedies, whether it's attacks, you know, on individuals or just general threats. And so, al yidei mitzvah zo ani morish lecha ha'aretz, that through the basic concept of bris milah, which is that the attachment to God and closeness to God is achieved through suffering and through perseverance through suffering and willingness to abide and to endure pain, that becomes the critical point through which the Jewish people are going to inherit the land of Israel. And I think we have to say, you know, that Klal Yisrael has proved itself absolutely worthy in this regard, both with respect to the mitzvah of Mila, which is still widely observed by people of very, very different levels of observance in general. The mitzvah of Bris Mila continues to be observed. And the Jewish connection to the land of Israel, the historical connection, has been proven over time, you know, despite the fact that, you know, it's causing us, you know, a great deal of suffering that we're in the Middle East. You know, it would be easier to go to Finland or Norway, you know, or Sweden, you know, and say, okay, you know, as many people contemplated, you know, whether it was Birobidzhan or Argentina or Uganda or Madagascar. The truth is, people know about Uganda, but there have been many, many, many different plans, you know, throughout history to say, okay, you know, we all get it. There needs to be some kind of a Jewish polity or a Jewish state, or at least, you know, as the Soviets said, an autonomous Jewish region. That was a Birobidzhan idea, because, you know, anti-Semitism really is a problem. And yet, you know, the Jewish people clung, Yerushalayim Ircha, we clung to our ancestral homeland, even though it of course is much more complicated. You know, it's a contested region of the world. So just like Mila requires a Yisurin, so too Eretz Yisrael nicknames B'Yisurin. I think that's exactly what Rashi had in mind. Al Yidei Mitzvah Zo Ani Morish Lecha Asaretz. I don't think it's metaphysical, but I think it's, you know, very rational and very direct that there are some very specific and targeted mitzvos, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Bris Milah, Inui on Yom Kippur, where closeness to God is really to be achieved through sacrifice, and to a certain extent, even not just through sacrifice, but through suffering. But again, what's the point? It's a bris shel ahava. If you really love something, then you're willing to sacrifice for it. You know, a child is sick, and the mother has to stay up with the child night after night after night. Nobody's denying that it's painful for the mother. But the mother does it every day of the week and twice on Sunday because she loves the child that much, right? It's a referendum on her ahava, on her closeness to her child. And so she does it, and she does so because it is of, you know, absolute importance. If, you know, to give an example, you know, from the opposite end of life spectrum, if somebody's house was on fire, you know, it'd be inconvenient to have to run out of the house at 3 a.m. into the freezing cold. But that inconvenience would be inconsequential because your love for life, your desire to live, would overwhelm what is objectively, you know, something uncomfortable. So everything is contextual and everything is relative. So the bris shel ahava, whether it's Mila, whether it's Eretz Yisrael, it's always a reflection of a person's overall commitment. And I think the Rambam, again, by codifying Hilchos Mila as the culmination of Sefer Ahava, I think was, you know, really hammering this point home. Leodia kama chibato shel Avram Avinu. Avram was a great lover of God. That's why he was willing to go through so much for God, the Atzar Nisyonos. And Bris Mila being certainly one of them, certainly one on the list, according to all the various enumerations. So now just to come back to that final point, our first question, what does this have to do with Hisalech Lefanai Ve'yesamim? So again, I quoted from the Ramban that the Ramban's idea is that it's a certain ideological commitment to believe that God has the override mechanism, even though the Ramban, and here Rambam disagreed, but the Ramban was of the view that in general there was something to sorcery, and that maybe it's not even problematic. Certain kinds of sorcery are not idolatrous, and they're not problematic for other nations of the world, but we're not supposed to go to the Ma'onanin and the Mechashvim. We rather should consult with God's prophet or with the Urim V'Tumim. God has given us more direct ways of communicating with him. That's what it means according to the Ramban. So I'd like to take the Ramban's idea, but put a little bit of a twist on it. I don't think it's necessarily like a matter of ideological purity or an ideological commitment, but I think it's actually about a person's, you might say, a total commitment in the practical sense to a life as a servant of God. So, Hitalech Lefanai Ve'yetamim is, that's the introduction to Bris Mila. In other words, God saying, and I know this expression has been bandied about, particularly in this location, but God is basically saying, you know, for this mitzvah, you really have to be all in. That the idea is that, you know, for certain things in life, not for everything, right? For the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, you don't have to be all in. It's pretty, you know, enjoyable. But for the mitzvah of Mila, right, your willingness both to do this, you know, Avram to yourself at 99, but also, you know, if you ever looked over at the mother during a Bris Mila, and I have on occasion taken a look, it's actually much more graphic than actually standing up there watching the Bris Mila itself, in my opinion. It takes a massive commitment, right? You know, it has to do not with physical wholeness, but spiritually speaking, to be entirely committed, not to just God in this, as Ramban says, in the theoretical dogmatic sense as running the universe, but that it's a referendum on your commitment. In the sense of being fully committed to service of God. And that's something that Avram was, and it has a lot to do with whether or not you love something, you know. And again, just to give, you know, another mashal here, you know, to get really good at the violin, I'm going to assume that it's going to take 6 hours of practice a day. So anybody, you know, who wants to, you know, get to Carnegie Hall, practice, practice, practice. So you're gonna have to be fully committed, right? This is not something that you can dabble in. And if you're fully committed, it's probably a reflection of the fact that you really love to play the violin. It'd be hard to imagine somebody, you know, putting in that level of commitment and that level of devotion and that level of perseverance to the point of perfection, or as close to perfection as, you know, as humans can get an instrument, if they didn't really love the endeavor. So what God is saying is that Bris Mila is one of these areas. Hitalech Lefanai Ve'yetamim, here's where I'm looking for an absolutely full commitment. And notice, it's not a mitzvah that he gives Avram right away. Avram gets it at 99. You know, at this point in his life, he's already been a monotheist, let's say, according to the Rambam's telling, for 59 years. He's already spent nearly a quarter of a century in Canaan. He came to Canaan when he was 75. God didn't deem him ready for it yet, right? This is something that you have to build up to over time. And then from that point on, you know, the mitzvah is really, mitzvah sabein al ha'av, the mitzvah really adheres in the father. Avram Avinu, he was the father of our nation. And then it gets passed down from father, not to son, but from father to father to father to father, you know, through the generations. And it's always a referendum on the commitment to transmit the Messiah. And I think, again, I just wanted to conclude with this note, it really is an absolutely remarkable thing that when it comes to the mitzvah of Mila and our historical connection to the land of Israel, we should be very, very proud. The Jewish people have, you know, clung in a steadfast manner to both of these mitzvos, and I just wanted to give an example from recent Jewish history that really illustrates the point, and then this will conclude and then send it over to Dr. Master. But, you know, if you think about the history of Soviet Jewry and the oppression of the KGB, and it's, you know, various precursors, the NKVD and others, send the Cheka, if you go back all the way, you know, so they made Bris Mila nearly impossible, and certainly, you know, criminalized Zionism. Everybody here remembers the SSSJ and the Refuseniks, and, you know, it's really a remarkable thing that through it all, right, Jews, you know, from all over the world, everybody here knows the stories of people sneaking into the Soviet Union to perform the mitzvah of Mila, which means that there were people there who were still willing to undergo the mitzvah of Mila, which is an astonishing thing. And, you know, people sitting in jail, not just Sharansky, you know, he's the most famous one, but so many people for years and decades because of their clinging to the land of Israel. And, you know, Bris Shel Ahava, it's a reflection of the deep love of the Jewish people for God and closeness to God, which is to be achieved through the mitzvah of Bris Mila, which is to be achieved through, you know, being in the land of Israel. Hisalech lefanai ve'yesamim. I think it's a remarkable, you know, recent Jewish history has again borne witness to the fact that the Jewish people in these areas can be very, very proud. We've been worthy of the legacy of Avraham Avinu, Zera Avraham Avi, as it relates both to the land of Israel as well as to the mitzvah of Bris Mila. We've really lived up to that. He is Avraham Avinu, and we are Zera Avraham Avi. Dr. Master.